Blog Talk Radio.
How's it going? Yeah, pretty good. You there?
Yep, I'm still trying to kind of load some pages and get everything together here real quick. Seems like we kind of got maybe a couple little topics to plug in, don't we?
Yeah, a little bit. Because we both know everything there is to know about Henry Sims and Corey Jefferson. Right? You did your homework?
I haven't. That's a part of the stuff I need to like pull up.
I'm kidding.
I know they're just they keep on making us more and more confident for the upcoming season by signing, you know, all these lesser known.
Hey, Henry Sims is going to put you over the top. He did play a lot for the Sixers.
What's that?
He did play a lot for the Sixers, and you know. He almost had the same numbers as Nerlens Noel on 36 minutes, you know, per 36 minutes. So, you know, he must be just as good.
There you go. That sounds, I can't argue with that logic.
Although I don't even think I've seen him or noticed him playing much. So, trying to look up Liberty Ballers to see if they've got a review on him. So, he's not even apparently, according to them, good enough for the Sixers. All right, then.
Sorry, I didn't do all my show prep quite in time. I was like just trying to finish up homework before this. So, but yeah. So, I didn't know who Corey Jefferson was. I knew Henry Sims played for the Sixers last year. So, and I thought he kind of like played himself out of the rotation for the Sixers, isn't that correct?
Pretty much, yeah.
So if he's not good enough to play for the Sixers, probably not going to bring a whole lot to the table for the Suns.
Well, I think he's more of a break in case of injury, you know, break glass in case of injury kind of guy.
Okay, that sounds good.
But he's not your ideal. So it looks like he's a plotter. Doesn't have any stretch, but he can at least, I don't know, hustle, I guess. Got a better rebound rate than just about any Phoenix Sun, so there's a plus.
Yeah, so he did start off the year starting some games for the Sixers and then kind of slowly played his way on the bench and had some DMTs and stuff like that. So maybe he was so good that the Sixers thought that he was jeopardizing their
jeopardizing the tank. Exactly. I mean, you can't let a guy play constantly who's playing well if you're going to tank. All right. So get us going.
All right. So, okay, is it Tirico?
I don't know.
I think so. Terrifico?
Terrifico. Let's just call him that.
That's the guy's name? Okay, that's good. Let's see. So we'll talk about Tirico White, Henry Sims and Corey Jefferson.
Well, you can't
And
forget about the other dude.
the Suns should give out like season tickets to anybody who can actually like name all the players on the roster.
Oh yeah,
Who's
shut up.
actually like seen all these guys play. They can like give a scouting report.
If somebody can give an accurate, coherent scouting report on Kyle Casey's career between college and now, then maybe they should get season tickets or at least single game tickets.
There you go. Looking.
So, hey, make a note to yourself since you run the shows all the time so well that at the end,
Okay.
I want to mention that we're going to have a big promotion to start off the season for the guys on the people on the blog. So make sure I bring that up and I'll talk about it. We're going to do like
Okay,
a.
we're gonna have.
Yeah, we're going to be able to let people buy tickets for kids. And then if they buy enough cheap tickets for kids, then they're going to get their own free tickets to to a game in mid-November. And so it'll be kind of like a Brightside night. Blazers Edge does a similar thing, and they send like 1,000 kids a year to a game.
Okay.
So let me talk about that for a little bit.
Okay, I'll make sure that we don't forget to do that. Now, damn, Wikipedia doesn't show it, and Basketball Reference does not show it. Usually they have like some kind of pronunciation. I think I'm assuming it's Tirico.
Let's just go with that.
Yeah. We'll go with that. Should we mention that we're going to go with that, but we have no idea whether that's actually how it's pronounced?
We could even say that.
Okay. So we got Henry Sims, we got Go White, we got our buddy Corey Jefferson. So we are styling with all those guys.
Oh, yeah, last year. Okay. Sorry, I'm making notes to myself on this giveaway.
Okay, we'll talk about those guys and my thing on the, I guess that'd be like a good time right off the bat to talk about the bench depth, the lack of experience they have there. These new guys, wealth of NBA coming to the table either. So it's not like, it was awesome though that like the day that I was finishing my research and posted my article was the day that they announced the Tirico White thing.
They knew you were going to post that, and they wanted to make their bench look a lot more veteran than it really is. So you bring in Tirico White and these other guys, and you're like, "Thank God we have the bench we already have."
I was just glad because if they would have like signed a veteran at that point, it would have just totally fucked curve on my data. But instead, they didn't add a single minute of NBA experience with that signing. Then we'll talk about Tyson Chandler. I'm assuming you're a pretty big proponent of the signing based off the angle you took there, so you can kind of talk about that.
Right.
I have mixed feelings about him because of his time with the Knicks, that stuff. Morris Brothers, do we want to get into that at all?
Don't know. I mean, yeah, it's always good fodder to talk about, but like, what would you?
I know you had your last timeline thing. Is that
Oh
still
yeah, I
actually, I
just
don't know
added
if
up
it's
the time, but that was
relevant at this
just to.
point?
Yeah, that was just a fill-in.
So you don't want to. We can kind of mention them at least a little bit in terms of how we got Henry Sims coming to camp, just to shore up that power forward spot.
Exactly. No, Sims is a center, I think. It's Corey Jefferson, I think, that's the power forward. Get it straight, Jim.
Okay. My bad. I blew that one. Okay, Kyle Casey doesn't come up in Basketball Reference. So, where the hell is he from? He doesn't
Which one?
exist.
Kyle Casey? I have no idea. I don't know where he's from. We don't really
Kyle
need to talk
Casey,
about
he
him
doesn't.
because neither of us. Huh?
Kyle Casey, he's as I said, usually if you have like any kind of college, if you've been drafted or sometimes if you're an overseas player, you still end up on NBA Basketball Reference. But
so he's not even in there?
Casey. Okay, so he's best known for being in an academic cheating scandal at Harvard.
Yeah, I just saw that.
According to the article we have on the site. Okay. Well, these are just...
How about Draft Express? Draft Express will have some more Kyle Casey, I'm sure. There we go. You didn't look at Draft Express, man.
I did not. I didn't count that up yet. Nope.
Well, they just have his stats on there. They don't even have any write-up. He's not even ranked anywhere.
Okay. We'll do that. Obviously, we're going to do the Nash stuff. I'm sure you have a couple good moments to discuss there.
Well, we could talk, just obvious things on Nash.
Which was the game that he had one eye?
The one
Which
eye?
Playoff game was that? Yeah,
the
one
eye was
playoff
game four of the Blazers. Not Blazers, Spurs in 2010.
Game four of the Spurs. Okay, that was in 2010 when we beat them.
Was it game three or game four?
Let me see. No, because four was Dragic, wasn't it?
What's that?
Which one was Dragic and which one was Nash?
Game three was Dragic and game four was Nash.
Okay. Okay, so Nash with the one eye swollen shut was game four in 2010 when we swept the Spurs.
And Dragic was three. Yeah, that whole series was just... I still remember Ginobili's quotes that we had to do everything perfect. They beat us this way, so we stopped that, and they beat us a different way, and we stopped that. We had to do everything perfect. It was wonderful to hear him say that. And that was about the only time in the Spurs history, they had no answers for something.
Yeah, that was.
All right, let's get going on this. I got to be done by 10.
Okay. Welcome back to the BS of the Sun podcast. This is Jim Kokenauer, and back with me for this episode is Dave King, making his triumphant return to the show. We've had a little bit of time off, and it's the downtime of the summer, but fortunately for us, the Suns have stirred up some news over the last week or so. The NBA schedule came out, so we've got a few things, some new stuff to talk about this episode. Dave, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Always exciting to be an NBA fan in late August.
Yes, late August is a great time to be an NBA fan. Late September is a little bit of a better time because then you have the anticipation building. But late August, at least we're getting ready to the end of the summer is near here, and we're getting ready for a little bit of better weather as that approaches.
Yeah. Well, we're getting a little bit of wet rain right now, but definitely as the temperatures go down, the season starts heating up. And right now the temperatures are about as hot as they're going to get. So, but we're trying to keep up interest on Brightside. We're trying to keep people thinking about the Suns. And certainly there's always a little bit of news reporting. So that makes it pretty easy to get through the summer too.
One thing the Suns are doing to help us is they're going out of their way, I think, to make some of the most obscure roster moves that anyone could possibly imagine. we've seen the signs at a couple people recently, and some of these guys seem to be training camp bodies, but a couple of them maybe are going to make the roster. They already had added a couple guys earlier, Sonny Weems, one of note, where they got from overseas. Not a lot of NBA fans probably knew of him or knew of his game very well, and now they've added a couple other guys. Tariqa White was the first one, and then they've followed that up with a couple other guys, Kyle Casey. Henry Sims is a guy that some people actually might have heard of. He played for the 76ers last year. Corey Jefferson. What are your thoughts about some of these additions? It's not exactly the murderer's row Yankees that the Suns are bringing in to compete for these last couple roster spots.
Yeah, no, these guys that are being brought in are simply exactly what they're described to be, is training camp bodies. So while Henry Sims played in the last year and a half in the league for the Sixers, and Corey Jefferson played last year for the Nets, he was the 60th pick in the draft last year, these guys are just being brought in to bang bodies in training camp. And the Suns don't have a really deep front line. Now they at least have bodies on the front line, so that if guys get nicked up, somebody else can step in. You don't want to overtax what is kind of maybe potentially described as injury-prone careers for Alex Len and Tyson Chandler. So you want to get some other guys in there who can bang around two in their place while they're resting. Preseason is not about winning the games. Preseason is about getting through them and making sure everybody is healthy and closer to being ready for a regular season. So when regular season starts, boom, you're on your road. So I wouldn't look too much into any of these signings. No, I really honestly don't think they mean that there's a Markieff Morris trade waiting on the horizon. I cannot imagine Ryan McDonough going, wait, I got to find someone like Henry Sims to replace Markieff Morris before I trade him for nothing. That's not the way this is going to go down.
Yeah, if Corey Jefferson is the ace up Ryan McDonough's sleeve, then I think we are all in a world of hurt. I don't see that happening either, but we could probably make up some kind of trivia game or something like that with some of the what should be more common observations on some of these players, where they went to college, which team they were last with, what position they play potentially. Yeah, I surely didn't know a whole lot of information about some of these guys that they signed, and Kyle Casey, for instance, I tried to do a search on basketballreference.com to see where he had played last, and apparently he is a ghost. He doesn't exist on basketballreference.com. I think maybe Draft Express, somewhere like that you could go to. I guess Ray did some research for us on the site and did an article when the signing was announced, and I guess he was playing overseas for some team in the Slovenia Telemach League that I can't pronounce. And
called the Sun.
We went to Harvard. And... What's that? Oh, the Sun?
Yeah, that was the nickname.
The Helios Suns, Domžale, I guess, Domžale. Which, speaking of things about pronouncing, I'm assuming at least that Tariqa is, that's how it's pronounced, Tariqa White, because usually basketballreference.com or Wikipedia or something shows like a phonetic pronunciation to give us a clue on it. And that's what I'm assuming, because I didn't see that there. So are we both on board with that? It's Tariqa?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I'd rather mispronounce Tariqa than listen to a couple of years of our old host, Chris Havas, mispronouncing Dragic. So, yeah, Tariqa, let's just go with that until we know otherwise.
Oh, yeah, and people like to do that all the time. You still hear that. That's really prevalent on the broadcast, stuff like that. It's kind of like a national broadcast. You see the guys that can't do it, they can't figure that out, just like the ASU and U of A. You see ASU get called Arizona on one of the national broadcasts, and it drives you crazy. You figure these guys should know better, but they don't, so they're not doing their homework. With a
just
lot of
like
these signings, so we've got these lesser-known players. It was interesting because I was doing an article recently on the Suns bench depth and the lack of NBA experience that they have now. Some of the players that they've signed, Mirza Teletovic, some of these other guys, Sonny Weems, they have basketball experience, professional basketball experience. Some of it's overseas, different things like that. These guys aren't 21, 22-year-old kids. they've been around for a little bit, but in terms of actual NBA experience, it's just not there. So the Suns, and interestingly enough, the Utah Jazz, which is a team that they're going to be potentially competing with for one of these final playoff spots, the Suns and the Jazz are right down there near the bottom in terms of years played, minutes played, games played at the NBA level among the bench. And while I was doing the research for this story and just getting ready to post it, the Suns announced the Tariqa White signing, which, you know, happily for me, serendipitously, didn't ruin the curve on my research and add a bunch of experience to the Suns bench right when I was in the context of making my point that the Suns lacked experience, so they didn't sign a veteran and kind of ruined the research that I compiled there. But well, what do you think about the Suns bench depth? Dave, is this going to be a problem for the team this coming year?
You know, okay, one way to look at it is just because a guy has NBA experience doesn't mean you want to sign him. So you can't base your rating of a team's bench on how much time they spent in the NBA exclusively. So, for example, Danny Green, when he was rediscovered by the Spurs a couple of years ago, he had been a late draft pick by the Cavaliers, I believe. He had been let go. He hardly played at all for his first couple of years in the league. He was totally a free agent, comes into the Spurs, and now all of a sudden he just signed an $11 million a year contract this summer because he played so well and he found the right spot. So what that tells us is that there's NBA talent all over the world. It's the trick of finding that talent and then putting them in the right spot to succeed. We have no idea if any of these guys are going to work out, including Sonny Weems for the Suns that have been signed in the offseason. We don't know if Mirza Teletovic is going to work out real well, but I wouldn't base it solely on did they work out for their last team, because every team is different and the way teams use guys is different. Channing Frye was almost a nothing. He had gone from the eighth pick in the draft, almost hardly playing for the Trailblazers before he signed on for nothing with the Suns over the summer and just a minimum contract, I believe, and he obviously did pretty well here. So, yeah, I'm not going to say that experience is the end-all, the be-all, but it sure does help, because especially it helps the fans, because then the fans kind of know the name of the player. But I really don't know until I see someone actually play in training camp whether they can be helpful or not, and maybe not even until into the regular season. P.J. Tucker is another example. P.J. Tucker was no better or worse than maybe a Sonny Weems who's coming over. PJ had also taken European teams to finals in their leagues and been MVP type, and he comes over here for nothing to play for the Suns, and he's had a pretty good couple of years. So I really think we just don't know until we see it. I think your point of your article is valid that, gosh, you know what, we're not relying on a lot of experience here, and many of the teams that win a lot of games in the league have veteran benches, especially those who win playoff series have veteran benches. And the Suns are not going to have that. But the Suns are not even a deep playoff team anyway to worry about that. So I think we just have to wait and see in training camp.
There was a very simple correlation, not including other factors that could influence between bench depth and the team's winning percentage. Now, with some of that, you figure years of experience, more time in the league, that means these players have played at least adequately enough to hang on and hang around the game. And so that must mean that they've got at least some level of skill, that they've brought something to the table for this time that they've been in the league. Now, with the Suns players, it seems like the narrative that I kind of hear in terms of being optimistic and hoping for the best kind of lies around this whole the mystery of players that haven't actually been here and failed yet. So you have the Sonny Weems, like you just made that comparison, and not like you were saying he was P.J. Tucker, but I've heard that. Well, he could be P.J. Tucker. And it's like, well, I could give you the opposite of that. He could be like yada, 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 but you don't know who any of those guys are because there's so many of them that have failed and didn't become P.J. Tucker that never actually, you know, they got their chance or maybe didn't even get their chance but made a roster and then faded away into irrelevance.
Well, just look at the top 10 list that Dead Julio put out last week. It was the top 10 weirdest names. Most of those hardly ever played and just faded out, to your point.
Right. So a lot of that stuff happens. You know, TJ Warren, I mean, we've seen some from him that, you know, there is reason to be optimistic. He looks like he can score. He looks like he can do some things at the NBA level, but he hasn't actually done it yet. Mirza, he has one good season. He's had injuries. There have been extenuating circumstances and things like this, but he's really had one good season at the NBA level. I think he's 28, 29 years old. So, you know, he's old enough that by this point, you know, he hasn't shown necessarily proven that he can be a reliable bench presence for the upcoming year, because it's happened once in, you know, to this point in his career. So, there are reasons, I think, where you say, hey, this could go well, but there's also a lot of reasons where you say, well, hey, even if, let's say, TJ Warren does do good and Alex stays healthy, then, you know, what do we get? One more of these guys that's okay? Because we know Ronnie Price is garbage. And Sonny Weems and Goodwin and Booker, you know, not all of these guys are going to step up. We'd be lucky if one does, probably. I don't see it where, you know, people seem to think that the bench, it'll be just fine. I do think it's an area of concern.
You know, there's a couple of memes that have, or themes that have prevailed in among fans of the Suns over the past several years. One of those themes is that no one's a good passer anymore because we were really spoiled by Steve Nash. Now, I'm not saying Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight are gifted passers. I'm not even trying to say that. All I'm saying is that it really is hard to live up to the legend of Steve Nash on any following point guard that comes onto this team. So there's that. And then the other theme that rides year over year over year since 2010 is that an entire five-man bench unit has to play well together. Really, what Jeff Hornacek has always said, and I know we haven't liked to hear this kind of thing because we want to see the kids play, he does prefer an 8-9-man rotation over a 10-12-man rotation. And that means, and I think we already know this, that Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight are going to be on the floor for all 48 minutes, if possible, of a game. That means you're always going to have an experienced guy running the point for the Sun, and you're probably, for most of the game, going to have an experienced guy in the front court as well. And then you're going to have two or three bench guys at a time on the court. So I wouldn't worry about all five bench positions at once. They're just going to rotate in with more experienced guys. Tyson Chandler is a great guy to have on the team now. Marquise Morris is in his fifth year, going into his fifth year if he's still on the team. Or if they replace him with somebody else, he's probably going to have about the same number of years of experience. P.J. Tucker in his third or fourth year. So you've got a lot of guys who will be on the floor with these guys with very little experience that can round out the ability to create and execute when you're in the late first, early second quarter, late third, early fourth quarter, when you're trying to get more of your bench guys in the game at once. But I don't think it's that big of a deal because I don't think he's going to play five bench guys at once unless they're playing awesome.
And, you know, there's always the dark horse guy like Henry Sims coming in to add a little bit more experience to the bench. Obviously, coming from the Sixers, I think he actually might have a chance to stick around and fight for a roster spot. But he started some games for the 76ers beginning of last year and then faded to the bench. And I think that we all know that the logic there must be that he was preventing the tank from happening the way the Sixers wanted it. And he was jeopardizing their draft position. So they had to remove him and keep him from being a kind of a double agent there and undermining what they were trying to do, because it's all about the draft picks in Philadelphia. Let's go move on from the bench, the signings there. I know you had written an article recently about potential impact that maybe Tyson Chandler might have for the Suns next season. I guess he was ranked as one of the better free agent signings this summer for the Suns in maybe an article you had read, and then you did some more research on that, Dave?
Yeah, basically, not a lot of the better players in the NBA switch teams. It just doesn't happen very much. And Tyson Chandler was one of the most impactful ones to change teams over this past summer. One ranking had him not quite in the top five, and another one had him as number three. So I just thought I'd put that out there on the weekend as something for people to chew on. Really, though, and that was just based on his stats, that he's got a higher wins above replacement projection for this coming year than all but a couple of other guys who changed teams over the summer. Things like that, you know, that was stats-based, but also what Chandler is going to bring to the Suns is some steadiness, some expectations, some professionalism, and he has been in the playoffs 7 of the last 8 seasons. He knows what it takes to make the playoffs. We've written articles for 2 years in a row now that, or ever since Nash left, really, that nobody on the team knows how to make the playoffs, how to lead a team to the playoffs, how to be the key cog on a team that makes it into the playoffs. Tyson Chandler knows how to do that. He's done it. He did it just last year with Dallas. He had their biggest, their biggest wins above replacement value, their biggest value over replacement player, the VORP thing. All those advanced stats show that Tyson Chandler was the key to Dallas doing well last year. They really, I mean, when you've got a backcourt that's a sieve, and you've got Dirk Nowitzki who's slowing down. I mean, he's even joking about himself most of the time now about how slow he is. You need somebody who's going to corral things in the paint, and Tyson Chandler did that pretty well. No, he's not 27 years old anymore, but he is a difference maker, and he helped the team make the playoffs. So that, I think, is going to make a big difference. I'm working on an article now that will post in the next couple of days on both him and Hornacek talking about leadership and talking about influence in the locker room and what the team needs and what Tyson Chandler might be able to bring there, too, from a non-stats perspective. That'll be dropping in the next few days.
So with all this Tyson Chandler, it seems like some of the numbers support that. We've had some other articles that show the effects he can have on team offense and team defense. Why is it, do you think then, Dave, that with the statistical evidence, and even also I think some of the pedigree in terms of what Tyson brings with some of his court presence, locker room presence, these different types of things, toughness, why is it that so many of the experts, pundits, are predicting the Suns to kind of flounder again this year, maybe win totals in the high 30s? I think Vegas has them around 38, 39. What do you think it is about this team that's causing some of these less than stellar predictions?
Well, they haven't proven anything. The NBA is all about all-stars and guys, you know, individuals who can carry a team. The Jazz have all of a sudden this superstar Rudy Gobert. He's played really well for 3 months. He might be Defensive Player of the Year for 10 years in a row, or he might fade out. We don't really know, but he's getting a lot of positive press in the offseason, carrying the Jazz to a better record than they've had in a while. Going forward, they're predicting. And then you've got the Pelicans with Anthony Davis. You've got other teams that are actually, you know, expected to do well. And then the guys in Vegas especially are going to predict wins for teams that know how to win. So they're expecting Dallas to make the playoffs there in Vegas. And the Blazers not to be as bad as they probably will be based on their roster. And so I think the Suns are just caught in the fact that they haven't proven that they can win with this team because there's been turnover on the team. They haven't proven that Brandon Knight and Eric Bledsoe can play well together. So it's just last year they were predicted to win 45 games and they won 39. The year before they were predicted to win about 16 to 18 games and they won 48. I wouldn't worry about those win predictions in the offseason too much.
Do you think that some of these people that are kind of pegging these lower win totals, like I know ESPN, for instance, did their summer forecast thing, and obviously we all know how well-respected ESPN's predictions are. I know that's something that's a running joke on the site in terms of their validity. But they've got the Suns winning 35 games. Do you think that some of these people are considering the Markieff Morris situation and what's going on there in terms of when they're picking these win totals?
No, I don't really know. I think the ESPN, the forecast thing, I think what they do there, if I remember correctly, is they ask over 100 people that are on their staff to give votes, and then they just tally up those votes, and that's how they do the little rankings. So it's probably fairly subjective. I doubt too many of those guys get into the numbers a lot. You look at the signs and you see, well, you've got Tyson Chandler. Yeah, he's good, but he's on the downside of his career. You've got Marquise Morris, who's in a bad mood. You've got Brandon Knight and Eric Bledsoe, who haven't proven they can play together. You've got, PJ Tucker, who really isn't an above average player, starting at small forward. You've got these kids, like even Jim, I'm sure they've noticed that there isn't a whole lot of firepower off the bench. There's no Jamal Crawfords coming off the bench for the Suns. So you've got potential issues there in terms of sustainability. You've got a team that was one of the worst offenses in the league for the last 3 months of the season, and they've added unknowns to the team other than Tyson Chandler, and Tyson Chandler is not an offensive guru. So can the Suns score next year? There's a lot of questions around the Suns team, and so I think it's safe for people who don't follow the Suns and don't really care about them to say, you know what, I have a better feeling about the Jazz. I have a better feeling about the Pelicans and all the other teams that are higher up in the West. That's why they're putting the Suns at 35. Nobody knows until a team actually plays it.
With Markieff Morris now, the Suns, a lot of these players are going to start reporting, well, not really, I guess, reporting, but they're going to start coming into Phoenix to start doing workouts before training camp, after Labor Day, usually. Is that how it works, Dave?
Yeah, that's generally how it is.
Okay, I'm assuming that maybe Markieff Morris might not be one of those guys that shows up with that group to start
He has
getting his
said he's
game
not
ready.
going to. Yeah, he said he
Okay,
won't.
okay. Now, I love the recaps you've done following the timeline stuff there. I like where you kind of summarize everything at the end of it, where you do an updated recount of everyone the Morris twins have disrespected in the past year, an opposing player, the referees, their own coach, the media, allegedly a former mentor, all the fans who paid less than a grand for their seat, the Suns front office, bandwagon fans, the judge presiding over their case, their entire Suns experience, and their agent. So, if you haven't been disrespected by the Morris twins, then you are in a very, very small minority of people. So, Mark, is that something? I mean, at this point, we haven't heard anything really coming out of this for at least, it's been quiet for, I guess, about 2 weeks now, maybe since the whole firestorm on Twitter, all of that, the puppet show there. Is that something that you think is going to hang over this situation as it gets there, as people do report? I mean, obviously, the first part, the media, I think, is going to kind of, keep fighting along with this, because when everybody else is there and Marquise's there, not there, it's going to be a story. And then when is Marquise going to show up is going to be a story. And is he going to show up at the 11th hour right before when he's supposed to report? And how is he going to act when he gets there? And I mean, isn't this something that I think it's not going away, is it?
Oh, no, absolutely not. No, the story, just the curiosity around Markieff Morris around the country is just going to be something going, geez, when is that going to calm down? I mean, you see some national writers that are just going, oh, what's going on there in Phoenix? They're not really going out of their way to figure out what's going on in Phoenix. They're just kind of curious. Huh, I wonder, that seems kind of weird, what's happening in Phoenix. So I think we've got a national curiosity more than a story going on. But hey, anything that gets people to pay attention to the Suns, right?
I guess maybe any press is good press, something like that along those terms. I don't think, and maybe I'm off base, but I don't think I'm wrong here. I don't think that Markieff Morris is a guy that's going to hold up well to the type of media scrutiny that he might face if this is an evolving story, because he doesn't like the media at all to begin with, right?
Markieff Morris has about the thinnest skin of anybody I've met, at least in the NBA, it seems like. I mean, gosh, the guy just can't stand He's almost like Donald Trump, who ejects people, ejects press out of his press conferences that he doesn't like, and says mean things about them and to other press, the ones that he doesn't like. He's just totally thin-skinned. I should stop on the politics. I'm going to stop right there. I'm not talking politics. I'm not talking personalities. It's just personalities. And I just feel like if you're always feeling disrespected, maybe you're the one who's disrespecting other people. And you're a little bit too worried about what they're thinking about you.
All right. Let's get back to something that you just touched on. What are your thoughts about Donald Trump, Dave?
No. I'm not going there anymore.
No, I am just kidding. I won't put you there. We'll move past that. So Markieff Morris, that situation going into players reporting, training camp, and following that theme, the Suns actually did just announce, we had the schedule a little bit ago, and we got our preseason schedule that just got released, and a couple of upcoming games there. I guess the Suns start with a couple home games, Kings, Jazz, and Rockets, before they go on the road for the rest of the preseason, so it'll be away for about 2 weeks before the season. Are you looking forward to those? What are your thoughts on preseason games, Dave? Are you yay, I can't believe it's finally here, I can't wait? Or are you hey, let's get past this, hopefully nobody gets hurt, and let's play real basketball?
You know, I am ultimately a Suns fan more than anything else, and so I'm pretty excited anytime there's a game being played that I can go to. So yeah, I look forward to preseason, and then by the third or fourth game, I'm ready for it to be over. And what's great about it is it will be. So it's only a 6-game preseason this year. The Suns have played 7 or 8 in prior years, and now this year they're only doing 6. That's totally fine with me. That's about a perfect length of time. You want to give guys a chance to show what they can do. The bench guys who have very little NBA experience that we've been talking about. You want to see them actually play some solid minutes. I'd like to see Devin Booker play some solid minutes, Archie Goodwin, T.J. Warren, against NBA competition, not just summer league competition. And I'd like to see how Mirza Teletovic works with, you know, in a lineup with Tyson Chandler, in a lineup with Alex Len, and see, you know, who does he play better with before you're actually counting on him to win games. So as far as, you know, the lineups and the matchups and all that. So I think preseason is fun for that. I think when we start seeing a lot of Henry Sims and Kyle Casey and Ronnie Price and, you know, Tariqo White and Corey Jefferson, when we see a lineup like that walk out onto the court, then I'm ready for preseason to be over. But then you never know. You never know. Maybe one of those guys will step up and have a great game, and all of a sudden he's a valuable player for the rest of the year. But the most likely thing is, it's just like NFL preseason. By the fourth quarter, you're like, when's the clock going to run out? So I'm excited about the prospect of preseason, and I'm just not as excited about the fourth quarters, I guess.
And I'm looking forward to my annual preseason meeting with Lon Babby so I can enjoy some of his pithy aphorisms and rapier wit. Lon and I have that nice love-hate relationship going. after the preseason, of course, let's go ahead and touch on this. This is probably the biggest news of the last week or so, and that is the actually second regular season game against the Blazers on October 30th. The Phoenix Suns will be inducting Steve Nash into the team's Ring of Honor. And Dave, what are your thoughts about that? Is the timing right? I think obviously we knew this was going to happen at some point. What do you think about the pending induction ceremony?
Oh, I think it's great. I think the Suns did it as quickly as they possibly could. You've already got the circus of opening night happening anyway on October 28th. And you've got the Tyson Chandler facing off against his former team, the Mavericks, in town. There's already plenty of hoopla around there. So, you know, the Suns, ever the marketers and ever the ticket sales oriented people, said, you know, let's make game 2 Phoenix Steve Nash night. So then we get another sellout. Maybe we have two sellouts before October's over. So I think the timing is fine. I think it's great that they contacted Nash and got that worked out, and I'm sure he's going to be there at the game, and they're going to have a ceremony at halftime. I think that's going to be a whole lot of fun. I'm excited for it, and I'm really looking forward to the video montage they're going to put together that's going to make everybody's eyes tear up just a little bit in the arena. I remember when they put together that video when Nash first came back with the Lakers, and that was played at the end of the first quarter, I believe, and it was just really fun watching those highlights play, and Nash just staring at the screen during the entire timeout between quarters when that was playing, and kind of tearing up a little bit and raising his hand to the fans who were chanting for him. So I thought that was great. So I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah. The next logical progression, I think, with this would be Sean Marion and then Amari Stoudemire joining him as the years go on. I know some people had thrown out the idea it would have been kind of neat if they put all three of them in together, but I think it's probably a good idea to give each of them their own moment that way. And
absolutely, Nash needs his own moment. He was the two-time MVP, so you don't take that moment away from Nash, but maybe those other two together. But then again, Stoudemire is not even retired yet. So who knows? We might even see a Marion night coming up this season as well to put him in the Ring of Honor. And I think you might have one other person that you think belongs in the Ring of Honor right now, Jim. I can't put my finger on who that might be.
Yeah, that's a very astute observation, because, yeah, I can't believe that Al McCoy still isn't in the Ring of Honor. It seems like just such a horrible oversight, a gross oversight there. I mean, Joe Prosky in the team Ring of Honor, and if you can have, you know, a doctor in there that was the team for, then I don't know why you wouldn't have the voice of the Sun, who's with the team from the inception, be in there too. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'd love to talk to Robert Sarver and find out what his logic is behind not having him in there. I mean, can you think of a good argument for why he shouldn't be included?
You're talking about Al McCoy specifically?
Yes.
Yeah, I think just generally, I agree with you. I think Al McCoy should be in there because, for all we know, he's gonna drop dead during a broadcast. So you can't wait until he retires. I mean, the guy's in his 80s right now, so you might as well put him in there right now so he can enjoy it. I totally agree with you, Jim. I think probably the only reason they haven't done it is because he hasn't retired. There's some kind of unwritten rule that we probably don't want to do this until they retire. So who knows? We'll see how that shakes out. But certainly I'm very excited about Nash at least put in as early as he possibly can, assuming that the rule is you have to be retired before we'll put you in.
Right. Yeah, I don't see any reason to waste any time with Steve. I think that's a very, very good decision. I'm glad that they gave the fans plenty of time so that they'll have a chance to make their arrangements to get to that game, you know, even if it does mean that, you know, somebody is coming in from out of town, something like that. People have a chance to be able to make those arrangements, buy their tickets and everything, because I'm sure we're going to get some people besides just here locally. They're going to want to be there for that. I could still remember his last game here when the crowd did the "We Want Steve" chants at the end of the game, and that was definitely kind of a surreal moment there. So it'll be nice to see how, you know, exactly how the crowd reacts on this occasion with everything. But speaking of some of the Steve Nash moments, what were your favorite Steve Nash memories? What were your thoughts of his time here? How do you remember Steve Nash?
You know, more than anything, I remember Steve Nash for all the blood. I mean, that guy, it was amazing. His head was just a magnet. So first you've got the game one of the 07 series where he headbutted with Tony Parker. And it was so funny. I still remember Parker was laying on the ground, writhing in pain, holding his head, and Nash was the one standing up over him, wondering if Parker was okay. When Nash is the one bleeding from his nose, and Parker's the one holding his head, and Boris Diaw, who played for the Spurs at the time, no, was it Robert Horry or Boris Diaw? One of them walked up to Parker and said, "Dude, it's not even your blood. Get up." And Parker then had to get up when he was the one who was complaining too much. And then, yeah, Nash playing through that. I mean, part of that tribute video I linked to this morning's article where Robert Sarver talked about putting Steve Nash in the Ring of Honor. At the bottom of that article, I put that tribute video that they had put together for Nash 3 years ago, and that had the bloody nose scene in it, at least Nash scoring, you know, making at least one three-pointer with that bloody nose. That was just awesome. I thought that was great. And then with the swollen eye, closing out the Spurs, the same exact opponent team, closing out the Spurs with one eye in game four of that 2010 series, not able to see, and he still scores 10 points and has 5 assists, and he couldn't. When you're only seeing out of one eye, you can't see distance, yet somehow he was making shots, and he was getting passes to where they needed to go. It's just amazing. Those are my two biggest memories.
There's the good and the bad for me. I have some of those same ones, but then, you know, the same on the opposite end, you have the same things that are indelibly burned into my memory, which are the things like the hip check with Robert Horry, the Steve Nash in a Lakers uniform. I don't know if that's going to ever be something where it just kind of fades away, and I don't think about that at all when I think about the entire body of work. And, you know, as much fun as all that was, and you know, I'd definitely, you know, trade where we're at now for more coming up just short. You know, it just... When that team made their run in 2004, 2005 and had that young group together led by Steve Nash, who, you know, he was the veteran at that point, and he was 30, and nobody knew he was going to continue to play at that level for years and years. I was sure that team was going to win a championship, and for them to have never even reached the finals, it's still just kind of mind-boggling to me that as talented as that team was with, you know, with Steve Nash as a great leader, that they couldn't get over to the top to even make it to the finals with some of the tough competition that they had. So, you know, as much fun as it was, there's still a little bit of a bittersweet taste to all that. And maybe that's what wounded some of my optimism over the years, because I was just sure that team was going to bring a championship to Phoenix, and it just never materialized.
Yeah, the Suns have had a few chances to win championships, and they just haven't been able to close the deal. One of these years, we'll be able to see it, Jim. I'm holding out hope.
But in between now and then, we'll be able to go see Steve Nash at that ceremony, and that's going to be a lot of fun. And, if some people are still kind of upset about the Lakers thing, I think that, you know, this would be a good time to, you know, maybe mend those fences, repair that bridge if you've tried to burn it down. So I think, you know, Steve Nash is, you know, he's a Sun. He's a Phoenix Sun. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Right after that, the Suns have actually a bunch of really good games to start off the season. So that should be a lot of fun. Like you had said, the game before that is the Dallas Mavericks. And so we get to see the Tyson Chandler versus his old team type of dynamic. The Suns play the Clippers a couple times early in the season. And even though the loathsome Matt Barnes is now a Memphis Grizzly, unbridled hatred for the Clippers is still seething, raging. So it should be fun. Hopefully the Suns can take them down. We got the foolishness on November 6th when Marcus Morris comes to town, matchup against the Thunder. That's always fun. Los Angeles Lakers will be in town here too. So a lot of really good games. I can't wait for the season to get started. Any of those in particular, any of those early season games, opponents that you're really looking forward to seeing, Dave?
You know, yeah, and let me take this opportunity to tell you about one in particular, or at least one or two in particular. Somewhere around the 12th or the 14th of November, probably Saturday the 14th of November, We are going to have a really incredible promotion going on for Bright Side of the Sun fans, as well as underprivileged kids in the community. I'm not sure how many of you, how many of our followers are aware that Blazers Edge, which is our SB Nation sister site, or brother site, I guess, to be manly about it, up in Portland, has been able to get their readers to donate enough money to get 1,000 tickets a year to underprivileged kids to go to a game. And last year, they even had all those kids come to the game against the Suns, where the Blazers actually clinched their playoff spot. But they got 1,100 people, 1,100 kids to a game. Here's what our promotion is going to be, and I'm going to be posting a lot of details on the site coming up here pretty soon, sometime in the next week. But our promotion is going to be, you can buy a ticket for a kid to go to our game, either probably around the mid-November, one of the mid-November home games. You can buy a ticket for a kid for as little as probably $16, $18. And if you buy up to 10 of them, you will get your own free lower bowl tickets to that same game, and will get a pre-game interview session with you and all the other people who buy 10-plus tickets as well, with a front office member, either Ryan McDonough or one of the assistant GMs. Plus, you'll get a little bit of other VIP stuff as well. So a huge promotion to really, really help out kids in the community to really engage with the Suns early in their lives and get something that they wouldn't normally get. You know, a really exciting thing like that to happen for them. And you'll be able to participate in that and maybe even get something for yourself if you invest enough. So I'll put a lot more details on the site in the coming weeks, but certainly this is something we're going to shoot for, and I'm really looking forward to it.
And there you have the contrast on the show. Dave is helping kids, and Jim is focused on his myopic rage towards the opponents that he hates. But speaking of one opponent, okay, you have to answer me this. Now, as a member of the press, do you get granted a one-time exception for the Detroit Pistons game so that you can join in the public shaming of Marcus Morris and vehemently, vociferously, and mercilessly boo him throughout that game?
Probably not. No, I'd have to actually leave press row and go somewhere else in the arena, take off my media pass, and then do the booing, and then go back to press row as if nothing ever happened.
No, or you can take a game off, have somebody else. That way you can buy your own ticket so that you can have your ticket that will one pass to join in that. Because I'm unless something unforeseen happens, I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be at that game, and I would enjoy nothing more than to share in some of the heckling. I just sounds like a lot of fun.
You're talking about that November 6th home game against the Detroit Pistons. The Phoenix Suns are bringing in Marcus Morris, and yeah, you're thinking maybe the fans will react.
I think so. I don't think their memories are probably that short-lived. So that'll definitely be interesting. Maybe even more interesting if Marquise Morris is still on the roster.
But the Suns have the worst fans in the NBA. They'll probably just sit there, right?
The bandwagon fans probably don't even know who Marcus Morris is. But we'll have plenty of more time. We'll have plenty of more time to talk about that as all that approaches. So should have some interesting subplots and things to discuss as the season comes gets a little bit closer. And yeah, before too long, we're going to have some more like actual basketball, like things happening on a practice court, on an NBA court, types of nuts and bolts basketball stuff to talk about. So I'm looking forward to that. Anything else that you have for us tonight, Dave, before we get out of here?
No, I just say look forward to my post on the promotion that we're going to be doing. It's really good for everybody. It's really good for the community, and it really helps out kids. So let's do that. So first, we can focus on our hate for an opposing team or an opposing player in the first week of November, and then the second week of November, we can focus on making lives better for kids.
All right, that sounds great. And Tarico, if that is not how you pronounce your name, I am sorry for butchering that, but I was trying to look up the pronunciation, so sorry about that. Just give me a shout out on the comments if I butchered that. But that's all we have for tonight. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thanks, Dave, for coming back on and giving us a lot of information and entertainment value. This is Jim Kochenour along with Dave King, and this was the BS of the Sun podcast. Awesome. Thanks, Dave. I'll pop this up. Do you want to edit in there for your link or promo stuff or anything, or how do you want to do that?
No, they gotta still get me all the details, and then I'll make a separate post on it, and then we'll start a stream, a story stream on that, because I'm gonna have to push it. This is early in the season game, so it's not gonna be much time for people to buy tickets, but I think we can at least sell a few, so it should be fun.
Okay.
I'm
Okay,
expecting
good deal. Well, I'll
you
get
to
this up.
buy 10 tickets so you can get free lower bowl tickets and an interview with a front office guy.
Okay, you're expecting me to buy 10 tickets so I can do that. I'm sure I could probably work something out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay.
Can I
All
do?
right,
Can
man.
I heckle the front office executive if I buy the tickets? Because I'm not actually a member of the media. I'm a
You
what's it
can.
like some kind of benevolent, magnanimous type of benefactor.
You can. Hopefully, we'll have a few people from Brightside, so you'll just blend right into the crowd.
Okay, that'd be awesome. If it's like McDonough, you have to let me know, and I can get like one of those custom ink places to make a shirt that says McDonough sucks.
Yeah, we'll be invited
I can
back for
just
sure.
I can just totally troll him.
All
All right, good night, Dave.
right, man, see ya. Bye.